Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Well, you've been asking for it for a long time now, and now it's happening. Geert Wilders, the Dutch lawmaker who has been castigated for speaking the truth about radical Islam, joins us now for an exclusive interview on the Savage Nation. He was banned from Britain, and that ban was just overturned in the courts. This is his first American interview since he was allowed back in England. Geert, thank you very much for being with us today on the Savage Nation radio program.
It's an honor for me to be on your show.
Well, you're the real honored guest because you've been through, as a movie once said, to hell and back. How many years were you on that list of banned individuals?
Well, actually, I don't know that I was on a list of banned individuals in the United Kingdom, but I heard in February this year, when I wanted to travel to the United Kingdom, that Jackie Smith, the then Home Secretary, banned me from entering. So I don't think I'm actually on the list, but she just banned me for entering because she thought that my presence would endanger community harmony and therefore public security of that kind of nonsense.
Yes, of course.
You know all about that, don't you?
Well, I'm on a list with murderers and terrorists. It's interesting to me that so-called liberals would link speech with the action of murderers. To them, I guess speech and action are one and the same.
Exactly.
Your movie is the most important part of this discussion. All you want to do is show the short film called Fitna, which explores the Quran. Have you shown that yet in England?
No, not yet. But millions of people have watched it on the internet by now. But no, we plan to show it in March next year, and I still hope I will be allowed then to enter. As you know, the UK courts last week overruled the decision of the British government, the cowardly decision to ban me. So I went over last Friday and talked to one of my friends of the House of Lords, Lord Malcolm Pearson, and we agreed to try again in March 2010. And it was really ridiculous that the UK government thought that there would be some kind of rows or whatever in the streets of London, because I showed Fitna in the United States Senate, in the Parliament of Denmark, in Jerusalem, in Rome, next month in the Parliament of the Czech Republic, and never anything has happened. So I'm afraid, like with you, it's more a political decision than a decision that is based on any law. It's just the dimitude and the weakness of the liberal cultural relativists that unfortunately are in charge in Europe today.
Geert, you know, I noticed while you were speaking, outside were some of the most hate-filled practitioners of the religion of peace, screaming things such as Sharia law will be dominating England, we will dominate, kill those who insult Islam. I thought they were the best advertisement for why your film should be seen everywhere before it's too late.
Exactly. They exactly proved my point. While I was holding a press conference with Lord Malcolm Pearson in the UK Parliament, there were a bunch, a mob really, of Muslims shouting that I should be have capital punishment and that Sharia should be enforced in the whole of Europe, and freedom go to hell is what they shouted. And
why are they allowed to stay in England? That's considered freedom of speech, but my espousing of nationalist tendencies, meaning a nation should be defined by its borders, language, and culture, is considered criminal by these internationalists?
Yeah, probably. I'm afraid that all over Europe, it's not only the United Kingdom, even though they are one of the worst, those weak cultural relativists give in and give up to everybody who is speaking in favor of the Islamic dangerous ideology. But people are critical against, and they see as a threat. And of course, this is completely the wrong way around this problem. You cannot enter the United Kingdom, if you say if you're not incitement of, if you don't, I don't, and you don't, I'm sure, incite violence or hatred. I have nothing at all to do with that, but still.
No, I have not either. I wouldn't have lasted in radio 5 minutes, let alone 15 years. You know what I love, Geert? The BBC covered this on Thursday, and they said, far-right Dutch MP Geert Wilders has won an appeal against the Home Office decision, barring his entry. It's interesting to me that your ancestors in Holland who fought the Nazis, would they have been called far-right as well for standing up to Hitler because they believed in the sovereignty of your home country?
Of course not. And this is exactly the point I also make, the double standard that they have. But don't forget, the leaders in most of the European countries are weak. They are giving in. Most part of the electorate nowadays is also, a growing part of the electorate is from Islamic origin. They have a big identity crisis. They don't know who they are. They don't know what culture they should fight for. And once again, I have nothing against people or against Muslims, but I know that the Islamic ideology, the stronger it becomes, the less freedom we will get. So we have to fight this totalitarian ideology. This is why I compared, by the way, Winston Churchill did in the 50s in his book, The Second World War. I compared the Quran with Mein Kampf, and I compared Islamic ideology with other totalitarian ideologies, like communism or fascism.
Why do you say that the Quran is like Hitler's Mein Kampf? Obviously, that would incite a lot of reaction. Many people would say, wait a minute, are you an enemy of Islam? I know you're not, but I'd like you to explain what you mean by that.
Well, you know, I believe that Islam is not another leaf on the tree of religions. Of course, it has partly, maybe 5%, it's a religion. It has religious symbols like temples and the holy book and things like that. But I believe that Islam, unlike other religions, Christianity or Judaism, really has no intention to assimilate or to integrate. Islam wants to dominate our societies. The ideology is therefore totalitarian, and therefore I compare it indeed with communism or fascism. Once again, I'm not talking about the people. I know that the majority of the Muslims in our societies today are law-abiding people, but the ideology has what they call the kafirs, the people who are non-Islamic, has very bad things installed for us, for everybody is non-Islamic, and has no room for anything but Islam. And you see it I traveled to almost every country in the Middle East where the Islamic culture was dominant. There was in Iraq, Iran, Syria, and you see that there is no country where the Islamic ideology or the Islamic culture is dominant, that you see a rule of law, that you see a civil society, that you see a functioning parliament that can send a leader home with 51% of a majority. This is not the case. And we get all immigration, legal and illegal, from those parts of the world in Europe. And we should stand up and fight and show who we are, what our identity is, and it's certainly not an Islamic identity, the culture that we have.
So you are calling for, are you still calling for the ban of 5 years on the founding of mosques and Islamic schools, a permanent ban on preaching in any other language but Dutch, foreign imams should be forbidden to preach, radical mosques should be closed, and radical Muslims expelled. Do you still stand by those principles that you espoused in your book, Honest Talk? In March of 2005, you wrote a blockbuster of a book called Honest Talk. And in that book, this is what you called for. Do you still believe that these points should be implemented?
I really believe that they should be implemented because, once again, the more Islam a society gets, the less freedom we will have. And I believe that the immigration, which is often, unfortunately, illegal, but also very legal, we have a mass immigration from Islamic countries, is really changing our society for the worse. And I don't believe in Islamic schools either. I believe that young Muslim children, if they want to be independent and integrated, should go to schools with Dutch children and not separated and being educated in ideology of hate and intolerance. So yes, indeed, if Muslims in our societies want to adhere to our values, to our constitution, to our rule of law, they are very welcome to stay, and I would even like to help them to integrate. But if they cross the red line and start thinking about implementation of Sharia or commit crimes, I think there can only be one message, and that is that we will extradite you, and there's no room for such people in our societies.
You're absolutely right, Geert. We'll be back in just a minute with Geert Wilders on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
We're here to protest against this man, Geert Wilders, who insulted the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We're here to give him a message that, like he's doing his interview today, hold up. He'll remain hold up, because obviously he knows that in Islam, the punishment for the one who insults the Prophet is capital punishment. And he should take lessons from people like Fiogant van Gogh and others who face the punishment.
We're back now with my guest, Dutch parliamentarian Geert Wilders. Well, it's interesting to me that you have to go around with bodyguards since you wrote a book in your country. Are you still under the same protection?
Yeah, for exactly this month, for 5 years now. It started in 2004 because of my publication and what I said in Parliament and about Islam and mosques and radicalism. And yes, I got threats from all over the world, from the Netherlands, but also from Al-Qaeda-linked organizations.
Geert, does your government provide this security detail?
Yes, they do. They do. It's not my choice. If I wanted to have more or less, it's not my decision. It's the Secret Service and the decision of the Dutch Home Secretary to provide when it comes to parliamentarians for protection.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I admire that your government, that at least they're willing to protect you. It's more than I could say for the United States of America, which lets people twist in the winds who they don't agree with. You are not supported, strangely enough, by homosexual groups or women. They're the ones who have the most to lose by radical Islam. Why don't they support you?
Well, some of them do, actually. It's not that they don't support me. They do. Groups of them do support me, because you are right. If Islam would get its way, if there would be more Islamic influence in our societies, all the people that are non-Muslim, whether they are homosexual, whether they are women, whether they are apostates or renegades, or whether they are just intellectuals who are criticizing Islam, they will be the first to pay the price. It's especially the representatives of the Christian belief. However, where much of the Christians support my point of view, that those people, unfortunately, in our multicultural society are appeasing as well and are criticizing myself indeed. Leaders of the Jewish, leaders of the Christian community, but the real people, the common people in the street, support me. If there would be elections today, my party, and I'm referring to a poll from 2 days ago, would be the biggest party. If there would be elections, I could be the new Dutch prime minister. So there is a lot of support, but there is also a lot of resistance. I have to be honest about that.
Well, your society has always been a very tolerant society, and of course, I'm a student of the immune system, and we also understand how the retrovirus works. If you've studied HIV or any other retrovirus, they usually take advantage of a weakness in the immune system and then mimic the defense cells themselves and then take over the entire body politic, if you want to put this on a political level. That's what's going on in the West, which is that ultra-tolerance has enabled some of these radicals to enter the country under the guise of, let us say, asylum or please help me. They come in, the next day you wake up, they're trying to take over your country and throw you out of your own country, which I don't understand how anybody with any intelligence can't see it going on, which leads me to the next question. Since you wrote your book in 2005, have there been changes in your favor, meaning has Holland awakened in any way to the threat, or has Holland become weaker?
Well, let me first say that I agree with the analysis that, at least in Holland and most part of the Western world, we were tolerant also to the intolerant. And what I really hope that we start being intolerant to the people who are intolerant to our societies and to us. And because of this political correctness, we are not. Have things changed? Well, like I said, I represent now, at least virtually in the polls, the biggest party of the Netherlands. So things have changed, yes. But when you look at the policy of the Dutch government or the UK government or the German government or the French government, you see very little change. People talk about it more, but when it comes to policy, there is still so much politically correctness, also by the liberal and leftish press in Europe, that it sometimes sickens me a lot. But once again, the people are not fooled. The distance, the difference between the Vox Populi and the political elite is still huge. So we need more changes. We need not only to talk, but to act. And I think that by the next elections in Holland, we could really make a difference there.
Now, you state that a ruling elite exists among parliamentarians who only care about their own personal careers and disregard the will of the people. That's exactly what's going on in America. You have a two-party system that absolutely hates the people. And when the people stood up against the health care reform, which is socialized medicine here, Nancy Pelosi and others called them fascists, Nazis, etc., they were shocked to see the people care about their own future. Your party, who created your party and when was it formed? When did this new party begin?
Yeah, well, I was, before I started my new party, I was a member of parliament for the Conservative Liberal Party, as we say.
Oh, you already were in the system.
I already was in the system, but I got fed up with the current elite and the way they treated me, and I was not allowed and sanctioned to talk about, Islam and Islamization and the defending of our own values. So I left my former party after a lot of disagreement, and in 2004, I started my new political party, the Party for Freedom. It was in September 2004, and we took part 2 years later for the first time in the elections, and we got quite a result for a new political party. And then, because the old political parties only shouted at us and tried to demonize us in any possible way, as they by the way still do, we only became more popular. And the subject about the values and about Islamization is something. I mean, I hope that a lot of Americans come and see Europe and see that whether you go to Malmö or Copenhagen or Berlin or Amsterdam or Brussels or Paris, that our society is changing, that there is a parallel society where we have Sharia courts, where we have the most terrible thing, honor killings, where we have the most terrible things happening, and that political leaders looking in the other direction. And we really need to save our continent. And my message, I'm in the United States now, is that please, United States of America, my dear friends here, don't think it won't happen to you, because it is happening to you, and you will also pay the price if you look in the other direction and just ignore the facts that are on the ground today.
We'll be back in just a minute with Geert Wilders on The Savage Nation.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
We've had an amazing opportunity today to speak with Geert Wilders, the Dutch parliamentarian and filmmaker who was banned from Britain simply for speaking the truth about the dangers of radical Islam. Well, he just had that ban overturned in the courts. Geert, welcome back to the Savage Nation. I know you're very busy and you're giving us this exclusive interview. Your party, could American citizens make contributions, financial contributions to your party if they wanted to?
Well, they could, yes. And that would be very helpful for also my defense, because we were talking about the United Kingdom, and I luckily won that one. But in January, my criminal prosecution starts in the Netherlands, also because of my movie Fitna.
Criminal prosecution? A member of parliament for speaking his mind in Holland?
Yes. And this is a very sad thing, because the public prosecutor in Holland decided not to prosecute me. Then some people went to a court of appeal in Amsterdam, and the higher court of appeal ordered my prosecution. I could go for 20 months to jail.
Oh, my God. We've got to help you. Geert, we're going to make contributions to your legal fund. I know you didn't come on the program today to ask for money, but I know that money is the mother of politics, and especially the mother of law in the world today. We know that the opposition, the Sharia folks, are backed with unlimited funds, no doubt from Saudi Arabia and God knows where else. Is there an email address or a fund that's set up? If not, how would they make a contribution?
There is my Dutch website is called www.pvv.nl. P from Peter, the V for Victory, and the V for Victory.nl. And there you also find a link to the English website. And there people can see how they could help. It's not only that I'm being prosecuted for my thoughts in the Netherlands, but also the country of Jordan is threatening to ask for my extradition.
Wait, which country?
Jordan. the Jordan Brussels.
Oh, Olympics. Jordan, a wonderful country of freedom, yes.
A wonderful country of freedom,
so long as you're a member of the ruling class. Now, I want to read your website again. I want the millions of people listening to this show to make a contribution, whether it's $5 or $1,000. It's www.pvv.nl. pvv.nl. It's going to go up on my website as well. Many, many people have come to my aid and contributed to my legal fund, and I know that they're looking for good causes that have meaning rather than the Republicans or the Democrats. And I would encourage everyone listening to this show to contribute to a Geert Wilders Defense Fund, and we're going to talk more about that later on the Savage Nation. Has anyone in the American media wanted to cover you here while you're in America? Have they celebrated with you your freedom?
Well, not so far. I intend to speak tomorrow evening at the 10th and Wednesday at the Muslim student organization are trying to make it cancel this whole event. So there was not so much press now, but in my former visits to the United States, I indeed have been invited by Fox News. There was many shows there, also with CNN. That was what less pleasant. But I did a lot of press in my previous visits before here in the United States.
Well, I'm honored that you would take time out to warn America. What you're really here for is to warn America that what's happening in your country of Holland is going to happen here, no matter what the fifth column says in this country. And most people don't even know what the fifth column stands for. But today the fifth column is far more sophisticated than it was during the period of the 1930s when Hitler created the German-American Bund, for example, where they ran the American flag on one side of the stage and the Nazi flag on the other, and they had pictures of George Washington and Adolf Hitler on the stage, and they said that Hitler was just the George Washington of Germany and he meant America no harm. We know where that went, and we know what he really intended. In essence, you see a parallel battle today.
I really do. I really see a parallel battle, and my message here indeed is that not only take care about yourself and look, forget the political correctness and look what is happening in your own country, but also bear in mind that you are losing an important ally, which is called Europe. We now still adhere to the values of Rome and Athens and Jerusalem, but in 10, 20, maybe 30 years, Europe, if we don't change anything there, and also with the support of the United States, I hope, there will be the values of Tehran and Mecca that will be dominant there. So you are losing not only part of your own identity. I want the Americans to stand up and fight for their own culture, but also you are losing a very important ally in Europe, because Europe is changing, and Europe is changing for the worse, and it is happening here as well. And we really need to stand up and fight for our own values, which are once again not based on Islam, but are based on freedom. And all the freedom-loving people should stand up and say, hey, enough is enough. We won't take any more. And we elect now leaders that are brave. I always say we have enough chamberlains in Europe. We need more Churchills. And, well, if you allow me to say so, I think the same applies to the United States.
Geert Wilders is speaking today on the Savage Nation. And I want to set the record straight. Geert considers himself to be a libertarian. And he represents the true iconoclastic Dutch society that America and the rest of the world had always admired. But he woke up one day, I'm just speaking for myself now, Geert, forgive me, and he said that our tolerance has created an untenable future for this country. You also say that your allies are not the far-right Le Pen. You said you will never join up with the fascists and Mussolinis of Italy. And you say you do not want to be linked with the wrong rightist fascist groups. And, of course, I agree with you 100%, but that's how you are being smeared, isn't that correct?
Yes, everywhere. Everywhere they try to put us in a kind of extremist or fascist corner. And, well, we are not. It's a really an honest decision not to get involved with any party in Europe or anywhere in the world that has anything to do with racism or fascism. I'm a democratic elected parliamentarian, and I only use democratical means within our rule of law. I get a lot of support of it. And let me tell you, Michael, if I really was some kind of extremist, I would be I would be at the margin of the Dutch political system. I would have 1 or 2% of support. Being the fact that we are now the biggest party in the polls in the Netherlands with more than 20% of the vote within a 10-party system. That's a lot. Proves that we are not involved with anything that has to do with violence or extremism. We are just standing up. But there is so much at stake that all these leftish and liberal politicians and the press know that they don't want the change that we advocate, and therefore they try to put us in a most nasty corner. But the people are not fooled by that, and they will support the prevention of the Islamization of our societies and fighting for our freedom anyway.
Well, before you go, I want to quote your interview in the UK, because I think that it says a lot. You say, take a walk down the street and see where this is going. You no longer feel like you are living in your own country. There is a battle going on, and we have to defend ourselves. You say, before you know it, there will be more mosques than churches. And so your solutions are pretty clear. If you had total power, which nobody can have in Holland, what would you tell the people need to be done? What should be done in Holland to save your country and Europe?
Well, first, we should stop the mass immigration from people from Islamic countries, not because those people are wrong or bad people, because we have enough Islam, and the mass immigration and the demography is killing our society. So first, the first thing I would do is stop the mass immigration from Muslim countries. The second thing I would do is that I would advocate that people who are crossing the line, who are committing violent crimes and are sentenced for that, should be sent away. If they don't want our society, if they don't want our values, there is no room for them in our society. And thirdly, I would like to install in Europe some kind of, we can learn from the United States, some kind of European First Amendment. Because nowadays, why I am getting sued, and many others, it's not only about me, I'm not even that important, but many people in Europe are being sued because we lack a First Amendment, and people who are in favor of those Islamists, or those Islamists themselves are suing us incredibly, and they have a lot of money, they have a lot of support from Middle Eastern countries and from anywhere, and we don't. So stop the immigration, be tougher on people who don't adhere to our laws, and thirdly, make some kind of First Amendment, the freedom of speech, stronger in our European constitutions.
Geert Wilders is a member of parliament in Holland. His website is www.pvv.nl. I'm Michael Savage. I suggest that everyone listening to this show pay close attention to what you just heard and make a contribution right now by going on that website. Geert, I want to thank you very much. I know you're very busy today and on a very short schedule. And if we can help you at any time by telephone or any other way, we're going to give you the First Amendment anytime you want it, so long as I'm still on the radio.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was really an honor to be on your show, and I hope you will fight your exclusion order as well, and I'm sure you will win.
Well, God bless both of us. God bless the Western nations while they're still here.
Savage.
Here we have Geert Wilders has gone back to England with freedom of speech to talk about his beliefs, how he's afraid of radical Islam, Islamicizing Europe, which any rational person knows is going on. And what do we see? We see Muslims in London calling for his death, the destruction of Israel, and taking over the entire world by Islam. And listen to the sound bites. Now, here's clip one where they say they're going to kill him, and he should learn from Theo van Gogh and others who were killed.
We're here to protest against this man, Geert Wilders, who insulted the Messenger of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We're here to give him a message that, like he's doing his interview today, hold up. He will remain hold up, because obviously he knows that in Islam, the punishment for the one who insults the Prophet is capital punishment. And he should take lessons from people like Theo van Gogh and others who face the punishment.
The next one says there are Muslims all over the world who love the Prophet, and anyone who insults the Prophet, kill him. He says not that he will do it, but he needs to be warned of the consequences. Now, this kind of vermin is allowed in England, but Geert Wilders was banned by this pill-popping, degenerate, socialist, bum-running England who won't stand up to these Nazis?
He needs to know that there's Muslims in every corner of the earth. And these people, they all have love for the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said, the one who insults any of the prophets, kill him. That is a capital punishment. Not necessarily that I personally am going to carry out, but he should be warned that, you know, the consequences of it.
Now listen to clip three.
Great Wilder has insulted the Prophet and insulted the Quran. And as we know, the Muslims, the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, whoever insults the Prophet, kill him. So we are here to let the people know that we are not going to stand for this no more. That we are here to let the people know that the British, the UK, are hypocrites.
Whoever insults the Prophet, kill him. Now look at America. You've got people mocking Jesus every day. They put a picture of the crucifix in a jar of urine at the Brooklyn Museum. Another one makes a picture of Jesus or Mary in elephant dung. The Christians don't say kill him. They're insulted by it. They're repulsed by it. They're sickened by it, but they're modern people. These throwbacks are allowed in England, calling for the death of anyone who they disagree with. Now listen to clip number four.
He says so many things against Islam, and he says so many things about Quran, and nothing happens to him, and he gets granted to come into the UK. So we're not going to stand for it here no more. We have come here to let the people know that this is no more. So let the whole world know that if we had an Islamic State today, his head would be on the stake.
He said if they had an Islamic State today, his head would be on a stake. Is that what you liberals want, along with all of the other folks that they put heads on a stake? The gays, women who dare use a telephone? Is that what you're doing here? Which side are you on? You're on the side of the Maoists in the White House, or are you on the side of the people who know what's going on and what's coming unless you stand up to them?
What we say to him is, let him come outside. How is it that this man is now scared and the police and the government are here supporting him and protecting him from the Muslims? Geert Wilders, the message is to him is to come outside and face the Muslims. Let him come outside, let the police go home. 2 minutes. 2 minutes and see how he's faced with the Islamic view on all of this, what he said.
The next one in clip six says, here's the leader, when he comes to the UK, Geert Wilders will meet the lions of Islam who will not put up with him.
When he comes to the UK, he meets the lions of Tawheed, the Muslims that won't stand for this rubbish. They want to say that he's an extremist. They want to say that he's not representing their views. But this dog is the open voice of democracy. We can see that what he says is in the hearts of every government in Europe. We can see that everything that he says is in the heart of every disbeliever.
You hear this? And he says he's against the voice of democracy because everything Geert Wilders says is actually in the hearts of every European government and in the heart of every disbeliever, meaning they should all be killed and converted. Then the next one in clip seven chants and says, Islam will come, Islam will dominate from the east and from the west. No matter where he runs, this dog, Islam will be implemented. And the crowd chants, Allah Akbar.
Wherever he goes, let him know that Islam will come. Islam will dominate. Islam will dominate the east of the east and the west of the west. So no matter where he runs, this dog, Islam will be implemented. So he can go and crawl under any rock.
You hear this?
He can go and crawl under any rock he wants in Europe. But no, Islam will come and it will conquer the UK. It will conquer Holland. It will conquer Rome. It will conquer the world.
Now in clip nine, you're not going to believe this, all you good liberals hiding behind your tolerance. The next one says Islam will enter every house on the face of the earth and either elevate or humiliate every person. And they will see the believers victorious and Israel destroyed, and the non-believers destroyed and Islam dominate.
Islam will enter the house of every person on this world, and it will either elevate the person or will humiliate the person. And we will see the believers victorious. We will see Israel destroyed. We will see the European crusaders destroyed, and we will see Islam dominate.
This is Nazism. This is Hitler. And you say that you would have stood up to Hitler if he were alive today? You wouldn't stand up to a flea. You liberal wimps are killing the world because of your cowardice. And what do we have from the White House? We have Obama hiring czars. You heard about that story, but who are the czars? It seems most of them are outright Marxists, Leninists, or Maoists. Who is Mao Zedong? He killed 60 million fellow Chinese who would not go along with his vision of health care. his vision of a one-world media, his vision of a supreme leader, his vision of the great man himself. In other words, they now have almost total power. And which side are you on? Are you on the power of Mao Zedong or on the side of George Washington? Now, let's look at America and see if the radical Muslims in London who are calling for the death of Geert Wilders, the destruction of Israel, and their domination is any different than Harry Reid's advisors. You're not going to believe this. A top Nevada advisor predicted that the Nevada Democrat will vaporize his Republican challengers with attack ads. Harry Reid is corrupt. Harry Reid is trailing in the polls. Harry Reid is hated in his own state. But he's hired a team very much like the Taliban. A Reid advisor, speaking on the condition of Taliban anonymity, said, "I expect Reid to vaporize Loudoun or Tarkanian or whoever is the opponent." Can you believe this? His opponent, Loudoun, said Nevadans have tired of Harry Reid's angry, vindictive threats. "But today's threat is one that must be taken seriously," she said. After all, Senator Reid has shown remarkable skill in vaporizing Nevada jobs, vaporizing Nevada homeowners, vaporizing Nevada tax dollars, vaporizing our seniors' access to a solvent Medicare program, and our residents' private health care choices. So there it is. Reid advisors want to vaporize the opponents. And you think that Democrats are compassionate? You think they will do anything to win or nothing to win? You think they won't destroy you once they have total power? What do you think they've just done to you, idiot? Your dollar is worth about 40% less than what it was worth when the Great One took over this country. Now, the UN report has just been released that says counter-terror measures penalize transgender persons. I swear to God, they want the world to make transgender persons feel better at the risk of national and international security. And they said the controls focus too much on male bombers who may be dressed as females, and as a result, transgender persons are susceptible to increased harassment. So in other words, they'd rather see a plane go down than have a transgendered frisked. There's compassion, there's liberalism, the mental disorder.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. Let me begin by saying that liberals once warned the world about Big Brother. Remember the 60s? They were saying, watch out for Big Brother. That means an all-intrusive government that would overpower us, snoop on us, control us from cradle to grave. Well, now that the liberals are Big Brother, now that the liberals have become Big Brother, and now that they are Big Brother, it is in the hands of others to defend our fundamental liberties. Conservatives, libertarians, and independents are all resisting the dictatorial machinations of Barack Obama and his minions. So-called liberals are notoriously silent and absent in this epic battle for freedom. And here we sit today on the Savage Nation. Today I have to give you a speech that I never intended to give. What happened? Why am I here? What is this all about? Why is it so important to you? Well, on May 5th, I woke up to find out that I, Michael Savage, have been put on a list with murderers and terrorists. Let me say that again. A list of individuals banned from entering the United Kingdom not so much for what they have said, but for what they had done. And the illegitimate Brown administration, the Gordon Brown labor socialist government, the people now hiding in a bunker as they're about to be thrown out the door, these people have now said that speech is activity. They have made speech the same thing as action. So they've made murder the same thing as speech, which they can condemn. And so I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, are they liberals? Would you define that as liberalism, or would you define that as socialism or fascism? Well, I'll let you decide what you would define it as. I know what I define it as. But I'm in a quandary. I always liked the English people. I always liked England. And soon after this happened, I made many, many appearances on British television, Sky News, the BBC. Yes, CNN covered me, but not Fox News. Yes, there was a little coverage in some great newspapers like the Washington Times, but not the New York Times. Yes, and think about this, folks. Michael Savage is the only current member of the American media ever honored with a profile in the liberal iconic publication, The New Yorker. Let me repeat that. The New Yorker is an icon of the liberal establishment. Well, they covered Michael Savage. It was a, I would say, middle-of-the-road coverage. It wasn't particularly one way or the other. And yet, I'm still not heard from on Fox News. But you're going to hear from me today on The Savage Nation, the speech that never was, canceled by government intimidation. So let me begin at the beginning. Mr. President, my fellow debaters, ladies and gentlemen, or shall I stop right now? Why don't we begin with an actual opening from Cambridge University, the opening that you should have heard had Cambridge University lived by its traditions. Let's hear it, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cambridge Union Society this evening. This very special debate. We have a distinguished lineup of guests, many, many MPs, as well as, of course, our guest of honor,
Michael Savage!
Well, my chair will be empty tonight. This group of children who has taken over the Cambridge Debating Society have given the society a black eye that they will never recover from. Now, they will try to hide it from their own archives, but remember, I don't think this has ever occurred before. The government of the Gordon Brown administration no doubt intimidated them, that's my guess, with a threat of cutting off funds. So I will debate as though I am there, even though my chair is empty. Mr. President, my fellow debaters, ladies and gentlemen, I've been invited to debate before you tonight against the insanity of political correctness because a terrible injustice has been done. In May of this year, former Home Secretary Jackie Smith, now fired, released a list of murderers and terrorists banned from entering the United Kingdom. Michael Savage was also included on this list. In doing this to me, she has linked and listed one of America's most beloved radio talk show hosts who has 10 million listeners alongside Russian skinheads who are in prison for having murdered 10 immigrants and videoed the murders, as well as a Hamas murderer who executed two Jewish parents, hunted down their four-year-old daughter who had hid inside a crawl space, and when he found the little child, he crushed in her head with a rifle butt. That's right, my name is on a list with those people. Would not criminals of this caliber be arrested immediately upon entry into the United Kingdom? Or does this imply that all but those on the list are allowed into the United Kingdom? For example, Osama bin Laden was not on this list. Would he be allowed to enter the UK? Why would someone who has never committed a crime, nor appeared as a defendant in a criminal trial, nor been accused of an actual crime, be placed on such a high-profile list by a major nation of the West? I say that it is because of the continuing erosion of freedom of speech in America, in the United Kingdom, and in all nations where such liberties are supposedly granted, and this under the dirty veil of political correctness. My continued dedication to the principles of borders, language, and culture should seem no threat to a nation diligently aware of its own national identity. Admittedly, in my broadcasts, I may not reflect the keen and cool dignity of British gentility, but I have Savile Row in my soul. I must assume, then, that I pose a threat to the government, and one just as frightening as the most dangerous of international terrors, the thought criminal. This is a person whose thoughts and ideas are so powerful that they lead people to disobey the establishment. George Washington knew this. George Washington had become a thought criminal of the United Kingdom. Did you know that? And history has shown us that when an injustice is being done to a people, they rebel. It is those quiet, peaceful decisions made behind closed doors by polite gentlemen and their associates in seedy back rooms shrouded in smoke that provoked the people to action. Secret decisions with no oversight or communication of the kind which sidestep laws and civil liberties with total disregard for the voting public. This is what led to the tyrants of Hitler, Stalin, Castro, Hugo Chavez. We can throw a few others in. Rulers who, when given an inch, will run thousands of miles, perhaps right through our own homes. Ladies and gentlemen, people who disagree with the status quo, whether it's called political correctness or anything else, must speak up and be counted for. Speak for themselves and question authority. I, Michael Savage, have done nothing but this. Yet my opinions are casually shrugged off by so-called liberals in the government and in the media as valueless because they are not politically correct, an ideology with strict guidelines for what should be said and what should not be said in the limelight. Let me explain something. My crime is really nothing more than being a nationalist, a man who loves America, a man who has defined America as a nation defined by its borders, language, and culture. That is anathema to the internationalist Gordon Brown, Barack Obama, and the other internationalists who have now seized democracies across the globe. And as political correctness erodes the volume and value of our vocabulary, so too does it erode our freedom of speech and freedom to hold our lawmakers accountable. Accountable! An idea which in a modern sense can be traced at least as far back as the Magna Carta. People and their culture are not to be homogenized until they are compatible with other cultures and people. Compatibility must come from within, from debate and discourse and compromise and even legislation, but not from an arbitrary standard which might work for some people in some nations, but not, as Lincoln said, to apply to all of the people all of the time. When I come back, I will ask you, what kind of kingdom has Britain become? Does it still value free speech? This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bible that what I'm telling you is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I challenge Gordon Brown to do the same in his bunker in London. Let him get out a Bible. Let him get out the King James Bible and swear to God that he knows that I belong in that list. I doubt very much that he'd be able to do that. Now, what kind of kingdom has Britain become? Isn't freedom of speech a value that Western nations must preserve at all costs? One which sets us apart from dictatorship, anarchy, and fatal corruption? Yet it is precisely because of my freedom of speech that I've been targeted by the socialist government in England. This, combined with the appointment of the American FCC's new diversity czar in the United States, are further steps towards the extinguishing of independent thought on the airwaves and the so-called restructuring of free media based on the FCC's diatribe, according to Mark Lloyd, the diversity czar. Listen to me. In 2007, I was awarded the Freedom of Speech Award by Talkers Magazine. How could the winner of such an award be singled out and banned from traveling to Britain? Well, let's look at it another way. I remember in the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard a liberal say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is, oh, I think it's time to pass a standard to bring accountability to the airwaves. That was stated earlier this year by left-wing Democrats in the House of Representatives. I realize saying left-wing Democrats is an oxymoron. Is that liberalism? Aren't Britain and the U.S. about freedom of speech? That's what this nation has been about from the day it was founded. That's the trail of tears and the trail of blood that led to the freedoms that we enjoy in this nation today. And we cannot permit a few small-minded martinets who don't even know that they're inhabiting the souls of dictators in Congress right now to deny us a freedom of speech. Where are the true good liberals? Where are they? Let's take radio, for example. It's about political correctness. Today, radio is in a more perilous state than it's been in its entire history. In South America, the dictator Hugo Chavez closed down the opposition media in Venezuela. You say, well, that can't happen here. It can happen here. It can happen in America. It's already happened in England. As I speak with you, it is being happening in America. Senator Tom Harkin, Senator Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico, Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, and even House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were recently circulating a bill in Congress for the so-called fairness doctrine. What is that? Fairness? It's not fairness. It would require the holders of broadcast licenses to present controversial issues of public importance in a manner that was, in the view of the FCC, honest, equitable, and balanced. What does that actually mean? What is honest, what is equitable, and what is balanced? Well, it's a form of political correctness. What this would mean is that people such as myself would no longer be able to speak freely. Would that be any different than Chavez closing down opposition media? Is that not dictatorship, the fairness doctrine? Of course it is. It's just that we use fancy rhetoric in this country as opposed to police powers. But make no mistake about it. The fairness doctrine is political correctness. It is censorship, and it has no place in the United States of America. Let me go to another point. Here in America, we enjoy the freedoms afforded us in the First Amendment. The First Amendment is very clear. In Britain, there is no First Amendment. And yet, we see in Britain, speech is already being amended and controlled by liberals who may not like what you're saying. Let's make sure that never happens here in America. Now, let me give you some other examples of the power of freedom of speech. For example, I have said many times that Al Gore is a liar when he preaches that all scientists now agree that global warming is caused by human activity. If I can refute Gore's lies on the airwaves by citing numerous prominent scientific studies which refute Gore's hysterical con, I am using freedom of speech granted to me by the United States Constitution to do so. If radical environmental freaks were to make it a crime to deny global warming, did you hear what I just said to you? There are radical environmental freaks in the Obama administration, in the United Nations and elsewhere, who want to make it a crime to deny global warming. You've heard that, didn't you? They say they want to criminalize anyone who denies global warming. Well, such refutations as mine and those of prominent scientists would be banished from the discussion. Let's look at Iran. Ahmadinejad, the new Hitler of our time, the so-called president of Iran, has said that the Holocaust never occurred. The Holocaust never occurred, he says. Yet there's ample evidence in film, in video, and other places that could be shown at the United Nations. And he's also declared his desire to create a new Holocaust against the Jews in Israel. And yet we see prominent lawyers and journalists, some of Jewish descent even, in our own nation denying the Islamo-fascist connection. Worst, even defending Islamic murderers, for example, in Guantanamo, who would gladly cut their throats and decapitate them while chanting to Allah. Why do they do this? They do it out of fear of offending the SS of today, the Islamo-fascists. They refuse to talk about the codification of hatred for the West, for freedom, for Jews, for Israel, for the United States, and our way of life. That is freedom of speech, is it not? But what is freedom of speech? Why do these intellectuals who defend Ahmadinejad deny their own freedom of speech to defend the freedom to preach hatred by their enemies? Why? I'll let you decide why. It's all about fear. Something else about freedom of speech you should know about, and that would be sarcasm, ridicule, and satire. These are elements of freedom. And yet, do you know that there was a time in the history of England when people could be condemned to death for using satire, sarcasm, and ridicule towards their rulers? They'd like to put a bit in our mouth and forbid us from speaking. But we can use derision, my friends. We can use all of these tools, including sarcasm. What is sarcasm? Sarcasm's a harsh or bitter derision or irony, a sharply ironical taunt, a sneering or cutting remark, a review full of sarcasms. That's freedom of speech, sure to offend those targeted. You think I limit it to the left? You're wrong. I also offend doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans such as George Bush and his administration. I don't limit my criticism to the Democrats or the liberals. When I point out the contractor abuses in Iraq and Afghanistan, whose freedoms was I denying? This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I continue now, and I will conclude shortly with my speech that I would have given via video link to the Cambridge Debating Society that was abruptly canceled without warning, just as my name was put on a list without warning. This is a giant conspiracy, but I want to repeat again. What I'm about to say to you is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and I challenge Gordon Brown to put his hand on a King James Bible and say that everything he's about to say is the truth and nothing but the truth. All right. And I want to repeat again that I don't just go after liberals or Democrats. For years, I criticized the contractor abuses in Iraq under George Bush. Whose freedoms was I denying then? You have to understand that I am an independent. I am not a Democrat. I am not a Republican. I am not a liberal. I'm not really a conservative. By definition, I'm probably a nationalist. But that's a discussion for another time. But whose freedoms was I denying when I pointed out the contractor abuses for years on my radio program? Was it the freedoms of the military-industrial complex to rob the public? President Eisenhower once warned us to beware the military-industrial complex. I played his speech on my show over and over again. Now, who was I criticizing by playing that speech, Democrats or Republicans? I'll let you decide. When I state that our Army and Marine heroes are being sent in to fight door-to-door and suffer and die, and suffer and die, and then they are given court-martials if they do their job a little too well, because Obama is either the most hesitant or incompetent commander-in-chief in the history of this nation, whose freedoms am I denying? President Bush said he would not have politicians telling our generals how to conduct the war. Well, I wonder, was he not a politician telling generals how to conduct the war? No war, whether it was in Iraq under Bush or Afghanistan and Iraq under Obama, no war has ever been conducted like this. The same mistakes are being repeated by Obama in Afghanistan. Again, how about another issue? The monster issue, the one that they all want to hide, the issue of 30 million illegal aliens swarming across the United States of America. When I call illegal aliens invaders, and I present the social and fiscal drain that this invading army of illegal aliens is causing on our society, whose freedoms am I denying? Who am I offending? Is it the doctrinaire, knee-jerk Republicans or the Democrats? Probably both. When I, Michael Savage, support my position for borders, language, and culture, do I deny my fellow citizens their rights to redress their grievances to a government all too eager to continue flooding our nation with cheap laborers? When I present the fact that 30% or one out of three prisoners in federal prison is an illegal alien who came to this nation, one out of three prisoners in federal prison, is an illegal alien who committed a felony, somebody who didn't belong here to begin with. Do I deny or do I grant my fellow U.S. citizens their right to speak freely through me, a talk show host? Whose rights was I offending? Whose rights was I denying? Certain special interests, I would assume. If these and other like opinions of mine were mine alone, I would not have risen to this position I now enjoy in the world of the spoken and written word. In fact, I am the voice of the voiceless, who have been marginalized and silenced by the illiberal liberals who control virtually all avenues of images and ideas that the world now sees. All images and ideas controlled by the radical left, with the limited exception of conservative talk radio, the most vulnerable medium, now under attack by the new national socialists who would, well, I really should say the new national international socialists who would ban free speech that they disagree with by threatening sponsors through extortionist means of false boycotts, or by using other techniques, but wanting to achieve the same ends of any dictatorship. And what is that end? The total control of speech, which is the opposite of freedom of speech. Not only is this politically incorrect, it is categorically incorrect. So-called political correctness has no place in a free society. In conclusion, I want you to remember this. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was written not to protect polite speech. It was written to protect offensive speech. Vigorous, loud debate is the hallmark of a free society, not the pitiful morgue of politeness. I'm Michael Savage, and I've just presented my arguments against political correctness. In a speech that was supposed to have been broadcast to England, to the Cambridge Debating Society, but was arbitrarily cut off just before broadcast by a group of children who have inherited a great, great university's debating society and have trashed it owing to pressures by the Gordon Brown administration, in my opinion.
Savage.
Let me give you another lesson in what's going on in your country right in front of your eyes. It's happening in front of your eyes. And they're distracting you with the healthcare lie, or this, the euphoria, against it, single payer, double payer, triple payer, all aboard. That's not what you should be paying attention to. It's far deeper than healthcare. Healthcare, of course, is a very big part of communist revolutions around the world. And one of the first things Fidel Castro did after promising healthcare to the Cubans was, in fact, deliver healthcare, the worst amongst the worst in the Western Hemisphere. It's on the par of about Haiti. Haitian healthcare was about equal to Cuban healthcare. Ask any of the elites in Cuba who go to Miami for a Jewish doctor whenever they really need healthcare. They certainly don't use a doctor with a dirty smock and no medicine in Havana. So they're deceiving you by taking your eye off the ball. While you're watching the healthcare debate and you think that it's all about that, they have infiltrated every avenue of this government. It's my job to give you lessons in deceit and how the Communist Party USA has actually taken over America, either knowingly or unknowingly. It doesn't matter whether the Communist Party CPUSA took over America. They may as well have taken over America. Now, infiltration is an important phrase that you have to understand. It's one of the oldest techniques of communist tactics. Infiltration was advocated by Lenin and Stalin. I'm going to read you something now that was exhorted by George Dimitrov, General Secretary before the 7th World Congress of the Communist International. You're not going to hear this on Fox News. One paragraph. Comrades, you remember the ancient tale of the capture of Troy. Troy was inaccessible to the armies attacking her, thanks to her impregnable walls. And the attacking army, after suffering many sacrifices, was unable to achieve victory until, with the aid of the famous Trojan horse, it managed to penetrate to the very heart of the enemy's camp. Dimitrov said that Homer's famous story must be applied to the 20th century. He went on to say, we should not be shy about using the same tactics. The Trojan horse must be used by the party. And my friends, would you agree with me that the Trojan horse has now entered the gates? Who listening to this show can argue, after hearing the White House communications czar Anita Dunn praising Mao Zedong, that I am wrong to be the Paul Revere of our time in warning you that we're far down the path of an absolute and total takeover? Anybody want to argue with that one? This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
People fear Obama. You've got to understand they fear him, not because he's a black man, but because he is a radical left-winger. Now you say, okay, fine, we know that. Do you know he's actually he was the most radical left-wing senator in American history? Now that he has absolute power, do you think he's suddenly become a centrist? You say, well, thus far he hasn't really done anything that's too dramatically to the left. You're wrong. Take a look at the czars he has placed around himself, and you'll know what's coming in this country. I got to scare you for a little bit, because I'm a student of the worst example of totalitarianism that the last century has to offer in the West. and I have chosen Nazi Germany. I could have chosen Stalin in Russia. I could have gone back and studied the Bolshevik rise to power in Russia, which we could do. But a very interesting comparison could be made to the National Socialists of Germany. And the reason I mention National Socialists is because it's not well understood that Hitler was actually a socialist as well as a nationalist. He tried to create a hybrid between the nationalists who were in the SA, the brown shirts, who were diehard anti-socialists, and they were all nationalists, Ernst Röhm. But there was a whole other part of Germany that was quite capitalist, and those were the industrialists who backed Hitler in the beginning. And he had to placate them in the beginning, the same way this administration is currently placating the bankers and the other large industrialists, if you want to still call them that. So he plays the game of placating the military, send them more troops. He's placating the industrialists who are tolerating him right now, who came out for him. And then he's, you know, I can name several of them. I don't think I have to fill in the blanks. He's placating to a certain extent the socialist base of his party, but not to the extent that you would expect because it's early on in the administration. It's only been 9 months. So you have a mixture of the nationalists, which we see nothing of here because Obama is not a national socialist. The one thing he is not a national socialist. He is a socialist through and through. But you say, well, if you say he's a socialist, how can you say he's a socialist when so many capitalists supported him and still do support him? Well, that's because you don't understand that he's on a stepping stone to outright communism by using the industrialists to get him there. He's not really at the pace that he would like to be. He's still in the childhood of his administration. Remember that. He's only just started. There's an infancy, a childhood, an adolescence, and an adulthood. Obama is right now past the infancy of his presidency, taking his first childhood steps. And some people are starting to open their eyes to the threat that Obama poses to the world. That is outside of America, not inside America. Yes, outside of talk radio, where the thought police do not dominate, people are understanding the dangers we may be in. But the fact of the matter is he wants to run and rule society according to the laws of the socialists that have run and ruined societies in the past. The only question we really have about Obama and his minions are these. How dangerous is he? How far would he really go? What would he really do to those who oppose him should he have absolute power? We don't know how far he would go. We just don't know the depths of the tyranny within the man's soul. We've never tested him. Now, you had fascists in Italy under Benito Mussolini. You had the Nazis in Germany under Adolf Hitler. And the fact is that both of them went through a transitory symbiotic relationship with the corporate strata of each of the two nations in which they first appeared. Let me repeat that. Both the fascist Mussolini and the National Socialist Hitler went through a transitory symbiotic relationship with the corporate business strata in each of their nations in the beginning. Transitory now, okay? In the beginning, they had to do business with the capitalists. You understand that? It was Mussolini who embraced the system of capitalism the most wholeheartedly. He was not really he was not truly anti-capitalist. Hitler, on the other hand, only flirted with capitalism for a few years until his own internal divisions within his own Nazi party, primarily from the nationalist wing of National Socialism, objected to his dancing with who they thought were the devil, which were the capitalists. You understand that? Mussolini was only a populist megalomaniac. He was not truly a racist and a messianic racist. Hitler was a messianic racist. Do you understand that? Mussolini, on the other hand, was a populist megalomaniac, not quite on the same level. He was into nationalism. He reverted to the nostalgia for the glories of the grandeurs of Imperial Rome. We all know that. But it took them time, both of them, to gain total power. And so, along the way, they had a temporary symbiotic alliance with the corporate structure, one to build a Third Reich in Germany, the other to rebuild Imperial Rome, both eventually under fascism themselves. Do you understand that? I'm trying to explain to you that there's a big difference between pure socialism, national socialism, and what we're seeing in America today. And if you think that you're not seeing any of the same elements that were seen in the last century, then you're an ignorant fool. New York City, WOR, Matt, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, yeah, you always talk about, and you just said that history's repeating itself, and, you know, Ahmadinejad may be Hitler reincarnate and whatnot. Who would you consider yourself?
I have no answer to that question. I don't think a man can judge himself in history. I have no idea if I even have a place in history. I'd say I'm a populist writer, a populist broadcaster. I've written 25 books. I've had 15 great years in radio. I don't know what that means historically.
History to know, you know, who I would compare you to. The only thing I know is that, you know, you're one of the only people speaking out for what you feel is right.
Well, I think there are others who speak out. I see it all the time. I read about it all the time. They do it in their own way on different subjects. There's certainly enough people who are trying to hold Obama up to the standards of American decency. I don't know if they're getting anywhere, what with the mainstream media being 98% in the pocket of the Obama administration.
Yeah. Well, what's scary is the czars here. This is some sort of shadow.
The czars are un-American. They should be taken out of business. They should immediately be removed from office. There is no question in my mind, no American president in history has ever appointed czars. Think of the word themselves, czar? The czar? Not appointed? No vetting? Nobody knows who they are? Every one of them, when you turn the rock over under which they came from, they turn out to have written on the glories of communism or socialism? What does that tell you about Obama's long-range goals?
Sounds like a shadow government he's setting up for when he takes control. Power of the...
Well, oh my goodness, I pray to God every night, I pray to God that it's only paranoia. I swear to God, Matt, and everyone else listening to the show, I got to tell you, every night I have to say to myself, let's put aside all the rhetoric, let's put aside all of the theatrics, and let me analyze for myself just exactly where is Obama coming from and where does he want to take this country. Now, you could say on one hand, your worst fears have never materialized in your life. Why should you think that your worst fears about Obama will materialize? Well, I'll answer that question. Because often it is not the individual in power who you have to fear, it's the people around him who you have to fear. He himself may be just a mainstream, good-natured leftist who wants to do good for the most number of people. That's possible. But if you look at some of the absolutely dark-hearted individuals who he has put in as czars, the dark-hearted people behind him in Chicago, you should be frightened to the core of your being. That's what I come to. That is my absolute opinion. And the reason I think that we should fear this is because there is no counterstroke going on from the Republicans. Do you remember that when Bush was in power, virtually every day there was criticism by the mainstream media or by the Democrats? Every time Bush said something, did something, if he burped, there was a response by one of the Democrats. Right now, we don't have a two-party system. We've had a very tepid two-party system for a good 30 years now. But right now, we simply have a one-party system, which I have named Republicrats or Democrats in 1994. We have a Republicrat system. It's two sides of the same coin, with rare exception. I mean, Senator DeMint comes to mind. Congressman King comes to mind. There are exceptional individuals who truly still carry the banner of American freedoms. I understand that. But they're so insignificant in number and in power that I say we have a one-party system. And whereas under George Bush, virtually every statement, every act, every law, every bill, every movement, every dinner, every piece of fish that he ate, there was a counter comment by one of the Democrats in the media or in the Congress. With Obama, there's virtually no response other than the man is great and is being picked on by the evil right-wing conspiracy. So given that this is the toxic stew in which we find ourselves, I think that you should be very worried indeed. But again, it's only one man's opinion. So forgive me if you disagree with me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
How did Congress permit this imposter president to put so many dangerous radicals inside the White House without saying a word? The answer is that 98% of the people in Congress are nothing but glorified lobbyists. They work for special interests. They could care less about your freedom or my freedom. They care only about paying back the people who keep them in power. And obviously Obama and his minions know this. So they figure as long as they pay off and smear Wall Street, and they pay off and smear with enough stimulus money through Nancy Pelosi, who was the conduit of all the corrupt money, meaning all the money stolen from the people will rot in hell as far as they're concerned, with no power, no one to go to, because there's no representative government left. If you say that I'm making this up, let me step back from this for a minute. It's very difficult for you to follow a lot of what I'm saying and agree with it. I understand. I'm sitting here talking to you from a microphone. You're in a car, or you're at home, you know, your head's on children, sports, whether you're going to make a payment. I don't know, whatever your mind is on, whatever people worry about. Probably 98% of it is sexual if you're a male. Even if you're broke, your mind is still on sex. All right, that's the way it is. I'm a human being, so I understand it. So you tune in to Savage Nation, you like my voice or whatever, you figure I'm going to do a recipe or have some fun, you'll have a good time. But I see us in such danger, I don't know how to have a good time anymore. But then I have to step back and say to myself at night, okay, how much of this is real about Obama, and how much of this is fear about Obama? How much of this is fear about Obama, and how much of it is real about Obama? So as a trained scientist, I have to now go back to logic. Let's use logic and the scientific method. My fears tell me that Obama is a revolutionary of the Maoist type, because I told you there are 30 varieties of socialism at least. And I used to ask myself, what kind of socialist is he? Not a matter of whether he's a socialist. How could you even ask that question unless you're an ignorant moron who works for CNN? What do you mean, you're asking? Everyone in Europe's laughing. They know he's a socialist, except the schmucks on CNN don't know it because they have no history. They're like brain dead, educational zombies with lipstick. No secondary sexual characteristics amongst the males. They don't know he's a socialist. Everyone in Europe who has any sophistication understands he's a naked socialist. The only question is, what kind has he been? So you look around who he's appointed without any oversight by Congress. Every last one of them. Whether it's Ron Blum today, a so-called manufacturing czar, who says that we know that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. Very clever, Ron. You're a real big man now. You're real powerful, Ronnie boy. Have you ever fired a gun, Ron? Or are you another one of the red diaper dopa babies from Brooklyn? Another seltzer boy from Brooklyn, no doubt. Another one steeped in hatred for America. Another one steeped in hatred for Christians. You want me to go down the list? I'll start smashing this microphone into the table in a minute. If you think I don't know who's inside the White House, and if you think I don't know their backgrounds and where they come from, you are mistaken. I could smell it on them. And I don't like the stench. But if they were limited to NYU and Harvard and the other denizens of losers, people who can't make a living anywhere else but inside the ivory tower, we wouldn't even pay attention to them. But here you have Barack Hussein Obama, a very shadowy man who came to power out of nowhere with money that no one knows where it came from, $900 million allegedly was raised in the last few months from where, we don't know. We suspect we know. Foreign sources, Soros, we suspect. And now they have their man in the White House. You say, well, wait a minute. Soros is a capitalist. He's a billionaire. Why would he want a Maoist in office? I've told you 100 times I've studied revolutions. Because the way a revolution occurs is that the capitalist who puts the revolutionary in power thinks he can control the revolutionary. And what he finds out soon, within 2 to 3 years, that's how long it takes. And remember, this one has only been in office for 9 months. In 2 to 3 years, the puppet of the capitalist suddenly asserts himself, and the capitalist realizes he made a mistake and he has no power over the puppet. The puppet is now the master. And that's where Obama is going. This guy has just gotten started. This guy is only 9 months old as a president. He's got a long way to go. He's young, he's vigorous, strong, unlimited energy, and he's just warming up. So you say to yourself, okay, what are you getting at, Savage? I'm telling you that if you analyze this scientifically, pure logic, you sit back and you say, how much of this fear of Obama is real and how much it is baseless fear based upon the fact that you just don't like him because he's a left-winger? I said, well, let's analyze the facts. Has he surrounded himself with czars who are in love with Thomas Jefferson's democracy? No. Has he chosen czars who believe in freedom? No. Has he chosen czars who believe in individual liberty? No. He's chosen the opposite. He's chosen radical, rigid, brittle, left-wing, minuscule people from the universities who joke about Mao Zedong as though Mao Zedong is a benign figure. Mao Zedong was responsible for the deaths of 60 million Chinese, according to experts on China. That includes about 15 million who were executed outright for being counter-revolutionaries. 1 million party members and intellectuals were killed during Mao's Cultural Revolution, many by execution, others in work camps. 10 to 15 million people. Now, the bulk of the deaths for which Mao Zedong was responsible stemmed from the famines caused by his mad agricultural collectivization program. What was his mad agricultural collectivization program? What do I mean by that? Mao Zedong in China began to seize the land that he had promised the peasants, and then he forced the peasants that he used into collective farms right along the same lines as Joseph Stalin. Let's go to Russia for a minute. Joseph Stalin, when he took power in Russia after the Bolshevik Revolution, some years later, after the original Bolsheviks more or less were gone, along came the steel man, Stalin. That's a made-up name and means Stalin, steel man. And steel man... Russia was still producing enough agriculture to feed itself. The steel man didn't like the kulaks in Russia. Who were the kulaks? They were the capitalists, small capitalist farmers. Let's say you're a pig farmer, a wheat farmer, or an avocado grower. You are a kulak. What he did was he stole your land. He threw you off your own land. He took away your pig farm, your cattle farm, your wheat farm, your soy farm. He took it away from you, and he gave it to the government to run. He put dumb idiot peasants who couldn't run anything to run the farms. And as a result, the farms stopped producing all of the products that the capitalists could produce, and people started to starve to death. You understand? Why did he do it? Because these farms were too individualistic. And so they forced the peasants into communes. All the property, not merely the land, became state property. All the property, not merely the land, became state property. And what was this? It caused famine. I am telling you that Obama is an inexperienced man. Obama is a very, very devious man. Obama is a very cagey man. Obama has limitless energy. And Obama does not even understand where this could lead. If he himself is not the evil inheritor of Maoism and would like to see such acts occur in America, then the people he has put in power, many of them, and I can name one after the other, are. So therefore, I say to you, give it 2 to 3 years. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Why are we in Afghanistan? What should we do with Afghanistan? Should we cut and run and let the Taliban or Al-Qaeda, whatever they call them over there, we know who they are, radical Islamists, you know, why mince words, take over the country? I mean, Karzai is corrupt. He stole the election. I mean, basically, you got a terrorist running Afghanistan right now, propped up by the American government. I mean, you think I don't see it? What, am I blind? I see everything. I have the eye that sees all. I have the all-seeing eye, 360-degree eye. Karzai is corrupt. He's running Afghanistan. Who put him in? We put them in. Why? What are we there for? What the heck does Afghanistan have to do with America? Can anyone explain it to me? For the life of me, I don't know why we are there, why our men are dying. 10 men died. Why did 10 American Special Forces men die? Well, 2 were shot in the back by Afghani police who were probably Taliban. In the, you know, you would trust them if you were a soldier. You'd want your cohort from the Afghani police fighting alongside you. At night, he puts on the police uniform. You go to sleep, he shoots you in the back. The other 8 were overrun on a fort that they set up on top of a hill in some horrendous tribal region. Now, why were they able to overrun the hill? Why was the enemy able to overrun the hill? Well, you didn't read this in your local paper, boys and girls. Half of the hundreds of Taliban who came screaming up the hill to kill our men came out of a mosque. That's right. The imam told them to go kill the crusaders on the hill. And why was the mosque permitted to be a haven, a safe haven for murderers and terrorists? Because of the rules of engagement. Mosques, you see, are off limits. Mosques are sacred. And although they have their weapons hidden in the mosque and they have their murderers hidden in the mosque, you can't blow it off the face of the earth because that would be too sensible if you're fighting a war. Now, although they charged up the hill, which is the reverse of any rule of sanity, they were able to win. Why were they able to win in running up a hill if the enemy has the high ground retreat? Never charge because you're going to lose. And yet the enemy had the low ground and they charged and won. That's despite the fact that we brought in air power after the fact, not before the fact. The reason is our men have rules of engagement that are suicidal. It's no longer do not fire until you see the whites of their eyes. It's something along the lines of, well, I can't even say it on the radio. It's a family show. The enemy, though, has a different set of rules, a different set of rules of engagement. The enemy's rules, as taught to them on the battlefield and in the mosques, is kill every man that you find in the most horrible way. Charge them and kill the crusader. Kill the white devil. Kill them, and kill them. They don't care who's there with them. They don't care if there's an army nurse. They don't care who's there. They're taught one thing. Kill them, kill them, kill them. Our men are taught, oh, don't shoot. Don't blow up that mosque, even though they're charging you from the mosque, because that might look bad tomorrow on Wolfie Blitzer's show on CNN, or one of the other propagandist leftist traitors from hell who'll run a picture of a smoking mosque. So you have to make a decision as an American. The American people haven't been given the choice. Has there been a national debate? Why are we in Afghanistan? Should we be in Afghanistan? Has a poll been done on this? Has a poll been done on this? Why are we in Afghanistan? Do you give a rat's behind about Afghanistan? I don't. I see no strategic reason for holding on to Afghanistan. Yes, I understand they'll have a victory if you let them take over the country and blah, blah, blah. And then they'll feel empowered, all of that. So what? So they act up, then use the weapons that you have, for God's sakes. Stop ripping us off the military-industrial complex. Trillions of dollars. Submarines, B-2 bombers, Tomahawk missiles unused. We have our men fighting like in the 18th century, hand-to-hand combat and rifles. You hear this? Rifles. We tell them to use rifles. We have weapons that we could fire from invisible sights, from submarines hundreds of miles away. We could wipe them off the map. We don't use them. What good are they? What good are they? So as I say, if we don't have the men to lead us, why are we having men to die for us? If, on the other hand, the American people decide that it's in our national interest to be in Afghanistan, then you have to say, how do we win? You're not going to win their hearts and minds. There are no minds there. There's only hatred. There's only hatred. They hate you. They hate us. They hate our religions and they hate our way of life. They hate our freedom. They hate our women. They hate everything about us. So you're never going to win their hearts and minds. That's a failed policy that goes back to Lyndon Baines Johnson. It failed in Vietnam. It's going to fail again here. You're not winning the hearts and minds of fanatics like this. So again, use your common sense. Use some knowledge of history. Either we cut and run or we kill them. That's all. It's as simple as that. And we kill them not using the best boys of America. We don't send our boys into a meat grinder to die into the hamburger hill in the sand. We don't send them there and say, don't shoot unless you see this. Don't fire if they're surrounded by women. Don't fire if they're in a mosque. Don't fire if they're in this and that. Are you people crazy? The enemy understands our rules of engagement, and he exploits them. Wouldn't you, if you were fighting a psychotic enemy? A psychotic enemy that won't even kill your fighters if he has his girlfriend with him, or his wife, or a boyfriend wrapped up in a woman's outfit to make it look like he's with a woman? What would you do if you were the enemy, you idiot, you? So, you know, you ask me to give you my opinion. I'm giving you one man's opinion. Should we be in Afghanistan or not? And if we shouldn't, then let's get out. If we should, three bombers from Missouri could end this conflict in a few hours. All they got to do is have a commander-in-chief who cares enough about America to launch them. And I'll tell you something else. I'll give you a little hint right now. If we had a president who was really fighting for this team called America, and not somehow, we don't know where was he born, what side is he on, we don't know. We have real fears about this government of ours under this current regime. If we had a president who was a real commander-in-chief and he said, you know what, that's it, it's enough, we spent 9 years and some of the best and brightest have died there, I'm fed up with it, launch them. Here's the launch code. Launch the bombers out of Missouri. I will tell you that 12 hours later, America would be the strongest nation on earth again. The dollar would rise. The stock market would rise. Confidence in America, both internal and external, would rise. And all of our enemies would stop acting up. All of them would go back to their holes, go back to what they know how to do best, which is hate, hate, and hate again. But I tell you, I got to take my hat off to Roger Ailes for standing up to the White House. Right now, the White House is ripping Fox News as often as they can. I've never seen anything like this, where a government, an administration, goes after a channel. Have you ever seen anything like this? What would have happened if George Bush would have taken the entire apparatus of the White House machine and turned it on, let's say, CNN? Tell me what the vermin on the left would be doing today. Tell me what all of these blowhards on drugs would be doing today. So you really got to support Fox News. They don't support me, but you got to support them. That's how I see it. They may not come to my aid, but I'll come to their aid. How's that? You know, when Rush Limbaugh was in trouble over drugs, Michael Savage came to his defense. When Bill O'Reilly was in trouble with sexual charges and accusations with the loofers, I was there to defend him. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Now have the red diaper doper babies running America, RDDBs, red diaper doper babies, red diaper doper babies, red diaper babies who then took dope. They'd like to put you into a mill and grind you up and spit you out. 30 million gone, and they have the perfect society, which is the society without any opposition that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi dream about. Quies custodiat ipsos custodes, pardon my Latin, I only know botanical Latin. And I'm, after all, only from the Bronx, so therefore give me a break. Have some compassion for me. I'm not as bright as liberals who went to grade school. Quies custodiat ipsos custodes, Latin phrase from the Roman poet Juvenal, which says, who watches the watchmen, or who watches the watchers, or who will guard the guards, or who shall watch the watchers themselves? The answer is, not us. We can't. Quies custodiat ipsos custodes, who shall watch the watchers? The answer is, not us. Why, the media was supposed to do that. The media was supposed to do that. See, the media was supposed to watch the watchers. You see, the media is supposed to be the watchers of the watchers. But the media is a compliant group of gum. Think of gum. Think of Nutty Putty. Think of bouncing Nutty Putty. Then think of Tom Brokaw. And think of all of those in the media who are simply Nutty Putty in the hands of Bill Ayers and his friends. So who will guard the guards? Who shall watch the watchers themselves? The answer is, we the people. End of story. And the day you stop watching is the day they take over, and that's when the fun begins. That's when the fun begins. That's when the fun begins in this country, is when they take total power. If you think you've seen revolution in this country, you've seen nothing yet. You haven't seen what Bill Ayers and his friends would like to do to you. You haven't seen it? Go watch the movie about Cambodia. You'll get a closer view. A real close view. It won't be a movie. It'll be a snapshot of a mountain of skulls. Tom in New York, WOR, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yeah, on June 9th, 1970, I was in police headquarters when Bill Ayers put 15 sticks of dynamite in the second floor bathroom and blew up this whole second floor of police headquarters. And when I found out Obama was associated with him, I said, oh, my God, they're back in power again. It's like...
But, Tom, they're not back in power again. They now have the presidency. That man, every time he goes on Air Force One, I want to throw a brick through the screen. I say he's an imposter. He knows he doesn't belong there. He's faking it. He cannot believe it. He cannot believe it. He has Marines saluting him, a guy who's anti-military and anti-war. How is this possible?
It's possible because the American people don't realize when something walks like a red duck and it quacks like a red duck, it is a red duck.
Okay, we go on now. Marilyn in Florida. Next up, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good talking to you, Michael. I mean, they've control. They own our colleges and universities. They've been working at that for 40 years.
They worked the hearts and minds since the 1960s. I knew many of them. They were all very evil people. I knew the leftists. All they wanted to do was steal your dope and do your wife. They wanted to steal your girlfriend and steal your dope. They were degenerates. They were evil. They're now running virtually everything.
Exactly. What my son graduated with a double Ivy, his undergrad in Cornell, his graduate at UPenn, both in Near Eastern Studies, which means he studied Arabic. Do you know what his oral test was at UPenn? Wanting to know
no.
what his views were on
Take
abortion. Now, what does abortion have to do with Arabic? Well, they're wanting to see if he is liberal or if he is right-wing.
He and studied Ryan, Arabic and the final exam was on abortion?
Wanting to know in his oral test, asking him in Arabic his views on abortion.
Now, wait a minute. In which university is this?
University of Pennsylvania.
The once great University of Pennsylvania.
Exactly, the once
great. The once great University of Pennsylvania, U of P, a once elite city on a hill, has now become nothing but a trash heap. And it was radicalized in the 1960s by the Bill Ayers, Van Jones type, the Jeff Jones types. They now run the universities, don't they?
Interested in wanting to know kids' political persuasion, to wanting to know what kind of grades they should give these kids. It's absolutely
It's astounding. Frightening. It's just frightening. Now we go to a man who knows a lot about communism. He calls the show on a regular basis. Jimmy in New York on WOR. You're on, Jimmy. Go ahead.
You're doing a great job, by the way. When you see that the communist world movement is winning massively in Latin America now, and they're spreading stronger and further in Latin America. Red China is penetrated all over Africa. You have the communist, I say, and you, I think you pretty much agree too, takeover of America. When you add all this up, how could anybody still believe the propaganda from the KGB that we won the Cold War? That was a fake.
Well, you've been saying for years that it was a game that the KGB played, that when the wall came down, we said that the Soviet Union was broken. But I've always known that – I've always suspected that Gorbachev was a secret agent.
Exactly. But it's a mess.
When Gorbachev came to San Francisco with the Tides Foundation, do you remember those days?
Right.
Okay.
And that's one of the things they talked about, excess population. So there is an organized movement to lower the population
of
the world.
Oh, God. Do you think they're capable of exterminating masses of people?
I think that there are people that would and can. Yes, I do. And you do it
Would there be enough will to stop them?
There'd have to be knowledge of it, because a lot of these things are done in a way where people don't understand until it's too late. There's still people giving Obama the benefit of the doubt. Would a person give somebody the benefit of the doubt if they're surrounded by Nazi war criminals and pro-Nazis and Klansmen? And you
right. In other words, let's say a conservative had won the election. That wouldn't have been McCain, because he was a stealth Democrat, planted the New World Order. He threw the election. We know that. But let's say there was a real conservative and he had won, and he created 40 positions for czars, and the czars had backgrounds with the KKK, neo-Nazis, etc. Tell me what the vermin in the media would be doing today, Jimmy.
They'd be trying to destroy him, but I tell you, the conservatives would destroy that person too, because conservatives would never allow that, no matter what party the person's in. We're not going to allow somebody to destroy this country. The left in this country don't have those same feelings that we do, the hard left, that is. Because I still think there are some decent liberals who are maybe misinformed.
All right, now let's stop right there. So let's get back to Obama. Where does he fall on the spectrum of communism? Where is he?
I think he's totally a communist. I call it Obamianism. When Obamianism is when you bring black radicalism, radical Islam, communism, all kind of perversion. When you bring all the worst threats together under one movement, that's Obamianism. It's very clear to me from day one, he may have been conceived with the hope of becoming a communist president. I've known communists, and they've all been raised.
Well, I've read that conspiracy theory, Jimmy. I've read that with the father in Chicago, the whole conspiracy theory. But I'd rather not go there right now because it would undermine your overall theme in that the audience can only take so much and follow so much. Isn't that true?
Well, I think...
That's for me to know, Jimmy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
New York City once had the garment industry. It was once the place where almost all the clothing in America was manufactured domestically, right in, you know, made in New York, designed, cut, made in America, then was, you know, then the South, come back to New York, blah, blah, blah.
The fashion industry is very glamorous. You see these gorgeous models of everybody so beautiful and made up, but you don't see where that all starts.
This is New York City, and here on Broadway is the heart of the American garment industry.
You'd walk down...
When Bill Clinton came along, he pushed NAFTA. I was one of the few people fighting against NAFTA along with other conservatives in the radio. I said NAFTA would destroy industry after industry in this country. But you listened to that con man, and you didn't listen to Michael Savage because I was a conservative, and you loved Bill Clinton the same way you love Obama, many of you. Knee-jerk liberals don't understand sometimes that you don't even know what you understand and don't understand. I told you NAFTA would destroy it was an industry killer. Then I told you that unions often kill industries. They kill them by demanding too much. So let's look at the facts. Clinton comes to power, 75% of all the clothing made in America, all the clothing worn in America is made in America. Listen to the number now. It was once about 98% of the clothing made in America. Used in America was made in America. Then Clinton comes, is already slipping a little. It's already losing some traction here. And only 75% of all the clothing that's worn by Americans is made in America. That's when Clinton comes in. Then Clinton pushes NAFTA, North American Free Trade Association, which I said would wind up shipping jobs to Mexico and to China. And when Clinton leaves power 8 years later, only 25% of all the clothing made in America worn in America is made in America. So he takes it from 75% to 25% because of NAFTA and the unions. The ILGWU gets greedy, Dubinsky and his mob. They get greedy. They demand better wages for the workers and this and that and toilet bowls in the sky. And no one can live on it. It's not a living wage. And ay, 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 and give it to me. And I'm a Zionist, a Zionist, a socialist. And you got to give them good thing. And you're not going to work. And you're working. And what happens is they have no job at all. Does it sound familiar to you? Notice what happened to GM? The workers had it so bad that they went out of business. In other words, the AFL-CIO demanded so many benefits and such wages for the workers that they wound up losing their job altogether. So here you have a toxic cocktail of NAFTA, Democrat, and ILGWU killing the garment industry. And 98% of the schmucks who were thrown out of business in New York still vote Democrat. They're ignoramuses. They think they're geniuses. Little mini Marxists, little Stalinists walking around in New York burping up a corned beef sandwich. They're all geniuses. So now what happened is you had 25% of the clothing worn in America was still being made in America. Then along comes the greatest imposter in American history, the worst president in the history of the world, George Bush. George Bush introduces not only more NAFTAism, but CAFTA. He goes obsessive on it. Every day he's pushing CAFTA, NAFTA, HAFTA, PAFTA, HAFTA, HAFTA, MAFTA, have to make CAFTA, have to make CAFTA, gotta get CAFTA, CLAFTA, CLAFTA, gotta get CAFTA. We gotta make sure the dresses are made in Peru, that no dresses are made in New York. We gotta have CAFTA, NAFTA, SHMAFTA, and half the schmucks in New York who lost their job are screaming, terrific, I want CAFTA, NAFTA, HAFTA, PAFTA, HAFTA. And now about 3% of the clothing worn in America, if that much, is made in America. The garment industry is gone, dead, killed by 16 years of Clinton Bush. Now enter stage left. We have a manufacturing czar enters from stage left who did such a good job decapitating General Motors that Obama has now promoted him to become manufacturing czar, hoping he can possibly decapitate all of manufacturing, whatever's left in America. I rest my case. I rest my case. I mean, I don't know how else to tell it to you. NAFTA, ILGWU, unions plus NAFTA, that's the end of the garment industry. I'm not anti-union. I was once a member of a union. I have spoken to truck drivers who told me what their conditions were like before the AFL-CIO and how it improved their lives. I understand all of that. But there's a balance point. You can only give a worker so much. Then they ship the jobs of manufacturing to, let's say, Sri Lanka. What happens? The communists in America, the social justice crowd, the schmucks, the social justice crowd, they're saying, oh, it's terrible working conditions, slave labor in Sri Lanka. Look at these children, the slave labor, they don't have toilets. It's horrible, we got to bring up their standard of living. Because I learned in the camp that the social justice is what God wanted. There's no God, there's only social justice. There's no God at all. God doesn't exist, only social justice. Internacional, that's all that exists. So we're going to help the poor little girls in Sri Lanka. So they helped them so much by attacking people who were selling clothing made in Sri Lanka, and they drive the people who are making the clothing in Sri Lanka out of business, and the girls who once had a slave labor job in a factory are now licking mud. They have no job at all. So in other words, there was a choice. When you have billions of people on the earth, not everybody can have a clean toilet and clean running water and electricity. Someone has to pay for it. And the fact of the matter is the communist, leftist, socialist psychos don't understand that. They don't understand it's a zero-sum game. If someone gets something, someone loses something in the world. And it's usually not Goldman Sachs. It's you. If it all came from the pigs on Wall Street who are rolling in mud like they've never rolled in, Obama comes along and he says, this is not going to go on. We're going to have regulation, blah, blah, blah. And you take a look at it. You take a look at the numbers that these people are taking out as bonuses, and you can't believe what you're looking at. These are people whose companies were bankrupt until the last Treasury secretary sacked the Treasury even further to bail out his friends on Wall Street, Paulson. And then instead of just coming back to life, they become bigger pigs than they were before. They go from 600-pound pigs to 1,200-pound pigs, and Obama says nothing about the bonus structure. We, the people, are left here gasping. So there's a lot of blame to go around. It's not limited to Obama. I've just shown you that Bush took the garment center and destroyed it altogether, as well as all other manufacturing. First it was Clinton, then Bush. 16 years of Clinton-Bush, and now we have the Matador has come in. Bush was only the Toreador. Now we have the Matador in the White House, and he has the red cape, and behind the red cape is the sword. I'll take some calls. Here's one from a local caller in Russia. Kevin, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'd like to just give a message to you from your fans in Europe and to tell you how important your message is to people here in Europe who do believe in the conservative vision. I'd like to remind you of Alexis de Tocqueville's basically statement on American democracy. When he wrote that thesis, it was a eulogy to American democracy, but for Europe, he was the first to realize that ideas came from the United States of America to Europe. And I'd like to draw your attention to the fact that your show has had a most European focus over the past few weeks, months, since your unfortunate banning in Britain. And I'd like you just to remind you that people are listening in Europe and are taking notice. And you're proving that Alexis de Tocqueville's theory is really realizing itself in practice. The fact that
Kevin, where are you right now? You're in Russia and you're listening to this show on the Internet. Is that right?
Exactly. I listen to the show, Dr. Savage, every day, and I try to spend the message here about.
But are you an American expat or are you a Russian citizen?
No. I'm a North American expat, Dr. Savage. That means that, I'm a North American expat, but I live here and work here in Russia. Yes, that's correct.
Well, let me ask you about Russia today. Do you find it's free in any way?
I think that Russia is free. Yes, one can do you can do what you want in Russia if you have enough money to do it. However, freedom is how should I say? It is really limited. And sometimes, if you want to do in media, it is definitely limited in what you want to do. What the Russian government wants.
Well, if you want to do media in America, it's limited as well. As you understand, the media here are run by skels. You know that.
Exactly. In Russia, it's about...
There's no freedom of the press in America. Take a look at what's going on here. You've got scales on every network. So what's the difference between us and Russia? I'm reminded of what Aldous Huxley wrote in the 1950s, and I've quoted this only a few times on this show. Huxley was a genius, as you well know, one of my mentors in so many ways. And I mean Aldous, not Julian. And Aldous wrote that in the future, as East meets West, East will become more like West and West will become more like East. I think that is quite prophetic in the sense that as we have lost our freedoms, Russia has gained them.
This is true. This is true. Russia.
And what about the Islam problem in Russia? Putin takes no prisoners on that. Is that correct?
No, Putin is a very merciless man. But one thing I'd like to say is that Russia is a very unknown fact. Is Russia is 20% Muslim.
Yes, I understand. In the certain district regions of Russia, the ex-Soviet Union, or Russia itself. Are you saying Russia per se, or regions of the ex-Soviet Union?
No, Dr. Savage, the Russian Federation and the borders after 1991, 20% of the Russian Federation population is Muslim.
And so how does Putin deal with the radicals within?
Putin is merciless with the radicals within because, and the fact is, he does believe in his own way in borders, language, and culture.
That's right. He's a pure nationalist, which is why I actually respect him as a leader of his own country, speaking for his own people. In fact, I'm going to say it again in this air so there's no mistake. When George Bush encouraged the puppet in Georgia to provoke Russia, do you remember which side I took?
Dr. Savage, I'm a new listener.
I took the side of Russia because they had every right to protect their territorial integrity. I believe that Bush made one of the greatest blunders of his entire 8 years, him and Condoleezza Rice, for encouraging the puppet in Georgia to provoke Russia into that military adventure. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.